Welcome back, everyone, to this 48th episode of Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean, and with me this week we have two special guests. Ruby's not a special guest, but I like to say that just to make her feel good about
I'm
herself.
I'm a guest. I'm not special.
Ruby, you're special to me.
Thank you. Aww. Stop crying in the corner now.
Of course, we have Ruby, and we also have Dan, who we've had before on our roundtable episode, also known as Media Master 9000. So how you doing, Dan?
Fantastic.
Awesome. Yeah, it's good to have you on.
Drinking my Dr. Pepper. Things couldn't be too
Gross.
Much better unless I had millions and millions of dollars.
He's drinking his share and Ruby's share.
Dr. Pepper,
because
that's...
Dr. Pepper's nasty.
Nope.
Horrible
that's
stuff.
A lie. That's a lie.
This episode sponsored by Dr. Pepper.
Anything but Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, do we have to pay royalties now that I've mentioned Dr. Pepper?
I'll just have to beep that out, I guess. I don't know.
Just beep every mention of Dr. Pepper and let them wonder.
So what we're going to do in this show is we're going to talk about the dungeons of Guild Wars 2. This is something that both Dan and Ruby have played. Dan, of course, was at the fan days with Ruby. And Dan was saying that he got to actually play a little bit more than Ruby because Ruby was passed out. You know, she was just... No.
I drank a lot while we were there.
No, of course that's not right.
I think she was in the other room playing Rock Band, right?
I was downstairs playing Rock Band. I needed a break, as awful as that sounds.
Playing the dungeons was, I kind of wish, when I found out Ruby was playing Rock Band, see, my brother and I, we play Rock Band, like, all the time. And so, you know, I feel pretty confident that, I got some skills. some Rock Band. Not just joking. But it would have been fun. I would have loved to play Rock Band, but what can I say? I'm glad that I was playing Guild Wars 2 instead.
Yeah, and you know what? That would not have been fun, because actually the reason I was playing Rock Band is because a bunch of us were chatting, and I don't know, somebody said something about Rock Band, and I was like, yeah, I've never played that, and they were all like, get up. Come on.
And you're like, don't hit me.
So it's like on the easiest setting. They put me on bass. They were like, your bass is easy.
Oh, bass, yeah.
I couldn't understand how to strum. I was like, wait, what? So I take my finger off the thing. And I'm going back upstairs. But no, that was... So yeah, Dan got to do, so much more than I did. He did the really cool explorable mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, this is something that we'll be able to talk about as far as getting more information out. And, you know, I think Dan wrote me an email, and I think it was basically like, Ruby's a noob, so she doesn't know anything.
No, I did not say anything of the sort. Ruby's like the coolest person ever.
I'm kidding.
But
she was an idiot and went down and played Rock Band instead.
Yeah. No. So Dan actually got to play it, so he wants to kind of let us know his impressions and some facts and figures that, you know, a lot of people, like you said, there were a lot of people asking these questions, especially like in the forums, right?
Yeah, there was a lot. Especially like with all of the new blogs that came out right after the fan day and when the press were there and stuff like that, there were a lot of questions that people were asking, and a lot of I don't know, it's kind of interesting because throughout all of the previous, all the history of MMOs that we've all experienced to date, there's always just kind of been one way to do dungeons. You know, there's always been the tank, the healer, and 3 DPS. That's pretty much the standard. And so when people go into dungeons, there's always the one guy who runs in, and then the one guy that stands in the back who makes sure that everyone's green health bars stay mostly green, and then three guys who are all trying to beat each other in DPS. And that's kind of the standard, you know?
Yeah.
But in Guild Wars 2, it doesn't work that way. And a lot of people have... when they hear somebody say, you know, when I was on my Elementalist, I switched to the Water Attunement, and I did some healing and stuff like that, they immediately think to themselves, oh, that person is going to get locked into a role of standing around in Water Attunement throwing heals. And it just doesn't work like that. No support abilities are so awesome at healing that they would take away your need to heal yourself, kind of a thing. I mean, nothing will make up for your own lack of skill if you don't hit your number 6 button whenever it's up or whenever you need it or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I've just been through a lot of forums and have seen that a lot of people are having a really hard time wrapping their head around the new mechanics that are involved in dungeons. So I can't help myself. I want to talk with people about Guild Wars 2 so bad, and so, you know, this is a win-win.
Yes.
You can talk to us.
That's right.
We will share it with other people.
So why don't you explain that a little bit about the kind of misconceptions and everything, and set us straight.
Well, here's the thing. A plus B equals... No, I'm sorry. It's not
working. It's not working.
It really was not. Some of the things that I've come across that people have said that, particularly with like the Guardian, they talk about always needing a Guardian. There was one thread that I was in on Guild Wars 2 Guru in which there was a lot of discussion about whether or not a party could complete a dungeon without a Guardian, you know, and that Guardians would be locked into some sort of tank or support, you know, role, and it's just not the case. There's just, everyone has their bag of tricks, whether it be from a support standpoint or a control standpoint. You know, when people were questioning whether or not a group of five thieves could jump into a dungeon and complete it, and after my experience in the Explorable Dungeon, I am fully confident, 100% confident, that the five of us could have gone and grabbed all thieves and successfully finished the dungeon as well. But the important thing to understand is that the strategy changes. Instead of having, you know, because the group that I was in, we had two elementalists. One was my brother. The other one was a dev from Content. Actually, the whole group was me, my brother, and I, and three developers from Content Design: Devin, Leah, and Matt. And my brother and Devin were the elementalists. I was the warrior. Leah was the engineer, and Matt was the guardian. And, you know, the whole time we're trying to find... I mean, there was one fight in particular that was just so hard. And Ruby probably knows what fight I'm talking about, where you have to keep that one guy alive while all of the little gravelings spawn and decimate over and over again.
Yeah.
The whole fight, okay, is all about keeping this one NPC alive while he does his thing, okay? And it starts out with these two, like, holes that spawn in the ground at different positions in the room, and these gravelings start to come out. There are particular gravelings who do a considerable amount of damage, like, a lot. But it's always this big wind-up kind of thing that you can usually get out of. But the thing is, there's no taunts, there's no tanking, so... Usually, if you have the attention of the mobs, it's because you're within a vicinity. I think one of the developers said that it's based largely on proximity to the mob. The guy who's the closest will usually have the attention of the mob. And so you kind of have to work with that. You're trying to get real close to get his attention. Then you got to, you know, try and dodge your way back out. But a lot of times the frustration that we ran into is that these big gravelings would run over to the NPC and do their big, you know, wind-up explosion thing and just completely decimate our NPC, and the whole thing would reset and we'd have to start all over.
Yeah.
And so the trick is to DPS down the holes that spawn. But the thing is, when you do that, two more spawn in different parts of the room. So you got to run over to those and DPS those down, and then two more spawn. So ultimately, you've got to destroy six spawning holes, kind of thing, that crop up in three different phases, I guess, is, for lack of a better word, to describe that. So, you know, we tried all sorts of different things. We had the Guardian trying to throw down staying by the NPC, trying to throw down, you know, the different things, you know, like the wall that goes down that keeps people from going around it, and then there was the shield, the little bubble thing that they do that blocks out damage and stuff like that. And Matt was the Guardian. He was trying like crazy to get this right and to protect the NPC, and we just could not get the holes down fast enough. And then Leah, you know, she was the engineer, so we had her stand near him, and the Guardian was helping us DPS down, and so she would throw up different turrets and things like that to try and use as punching bags, you know, for the mobs that came by. And it worked for a little bit, but ultimately the turrets would blow up and they'd kill the NPC before we could, you know, destroy all six holes. Anyway, so after this, working through this particular section probably took us a good hour and a half, you know, and I looked over at my brother at one point and he was just, you know, you could see the fury and the frustration in his eyes. You know, he was not enjoying himself. I was having a blast. And most people don't know Leah, but I don't know that I've ever really met somebody that's more in love with life than she is. So she was just giggling the entire time we were wiping. And so that just, you know, me and Matt and Devin were all laughing our faces off too, because, you know, and it was like bolstering us. And we were like, we can do this, we can do this. And there was a couple of times where we started to figure out different things that would work, different strategies that would work for our combination. And that's probably the most important thing that I wanted to, or most important point that I wanted to make here, is just that it's not about profession combination. It's about group synergy. Hmm. It's all about group synergy. Once you find out what combination of abilities best works for your group, that's when you're going to start seeing success within the explorable dungeons. You can't just say, oh, I need, you know, some warriors out spamming for four elementalists to keep him healed while he DPSs. It just doesn't, you can't do it like that. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. So, anyways.
See, here's the thing I'm worried about, though. I like, this kind of goes deeper into the whole anti, you know, trilogy theory, I guess. The whole thing about not having roles kind of scares me, because I like the idea of having a role. And is it still possible to have a role? Like, you know, because you can't, like you said, you can have all thieves. Well, I mean, that would be great, but you can't just have a bunch of people just running around trying to all do the same thing. I mean, can, as far as coordinating the group, can't you still coordinate roles for people? You know what I mean?
Yes, but not in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people find themselves struggling, is because they, you know, like my brother, he loves playing his priest. He loves keeping people's, you know, health, yeah, mostly green in their little health bars, okay? He loves that, but you get into, you know, Guild Wars 2, and you know, he was playing an elementalist, and he said at this later that night when we got home, or got back to the hotel, he was telling me how he was frustrated at first, because he wanted to play this support role. He wanted, you know, of heals, you know, the traditional heals, where you run around and throw healing rains all over the place and just keep people alive so that people can just stay in and take damage all they want. But it didn't help that much. Those support abilities are meant to soften the edges of the rough combat kind of a thing, the rough experience. And it works perfectly like that. There's not the traditional roles. So if you, for example, like if you got a bunch of thieves in there, okay, probably not everyone is going to be running around and stuff like that. There will be people who will begin to take on certain things as they see a fight, you know, requires a certain strategy or whatever. People will modify their actions accordingly to each fight, and each fight is different. And it, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain verbally, because both in the story mode earlier in the day with Leo and his guest and Ravius, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
And Ravius, like it was bizarre how quickly our synergy came together. Hmm. You know, we all just kind of saw what needed to be done, and we just made it happen. It was crazy, you know. We had a thief, and I was playing the warrior still, and he pulls out his flamethrower, and he's throwing flames all over the place, and then we had an elementalist in there who was throwing flame walls all over the place, but, you know, when you take too much damage, you jump out, and the whole strategy changes, the whole dynamic changes. All of a sudden, we've got Ravius throwing his sticky bombs and things like that, and I'm in the back with my bow and arrow, and, you know, and I'm my longbow, and I'm just firing explosive shots into everything, you know, and raining arrows down on top of the mobs. And then, you know, once my health is back up, I'd go flying back in again with my dual-wielding axes, and I'd just whirlwind the crap out of everything and get all this adrenaline, and I'd just use my adrenaline abilities, and then I'd start taking all this damage, and then I'd jump back out, and, you know, and it was just, the whole dynamic shifts, and it's bizarre how natural that change feels. I don't know if I expected it to work so fluidly like that, but it really did. So, I don't know, Ruby, did you feel like that kind of happened in your group as well? Just kind of this natural, you just started figuring things out and just started making decisions without people being like, hey, you need to do this or you need to do that. Did you have that kind of experience at all?
Absolutely. As we learned how to play, I mean, we were learning how to play, but we were learning how to play together at the same time. And it was this progression, and everyone almost seemed to progress at the same pace. And you started feeling this, oh, that's how it works.
Yes.
Yeah. It did come together because we were all learning how to play at the same time and in the same place.
Yeah. Hmm.
That's interesting. I guess I would have to play in a group like that and kind of see how that works. Because right now, I just try to figure it out, and I try to think about, we're so used to the roles, we're so used to rock, paper, scissors, where everything can defeat the other thing. Everything has a counter, it seems like in a lot of games. And to just be able to jump in there and kind of do your thing. Now, I guess one question I had was, like, is it set up to where, like you said, if someone gets out of the group, someone, something happens, and normally in a normal group, like say your healer left or some, was down or dead or something, then everyone would be without a healer. But it sounds like in this type of a dynamic, if your healer's down, or, not necessarily healer, but the person who's doing the support healing at that time, then anyone else can jump into that role easily. Am I still trying to throw it into roles too much there?
It may be different, and there may be some experiences like that in certain portions of other dungeons and things like that, but honestly, in the dungeon that I was in, I never felt like I needed to have that healing rain on me at all times, or to have the elementalist do that that geyser ability that does damage as well as gives health back and stuff like that. I never felt like that was integral. And the best support you can give your group is to manage your own health effectively. That's really the bottom line for that. When you're using an elementalist, one of the things my brother expressed to me is that he was like, I was spending all this time trying to run around and throw down healing rains and things like that, but when it came down to it, it just kind of got old really fast, and I wanted to be a part of the action. It's not fun to just stand back in this game and watch everyone have their, have a blast while you just keep healing reins. It's because it's not as in a game like World of Warcraft, you've got, your UI is set up with 5 health bars, and you're just clicking on those and making sure you're casting your heals, but it doesn't work like that, You cast a healing rain, and then it's got like a 15-second cooldown or something, and you can't just keep casting it over and over again. So he said I started flipping into my fire attunement and throwing down fire rain, or the meteor shower, and I was throwing fireballs like crazy, and then I would switch back over to my healing, or back into my my water attunement. I'd throw another healing rain, jump back over to my fire tomb, and just start lighting the place up again. It's just, it's not the support abilities of characters are not so powerful that they are the end all be all. You need to have an elementalist in your group or a guardian in your group to finish the dungeon. That's just not true. You don't need those. The strategies and the dynamics change if you don't have them in your group. And that's a whole other thing that I love about the dungeons, is that your experience is always going to be different. Even if you've played the dungeon, 15 times, it's one thing. Like, you go into a dungeon in World of Warcraft 15 times, that place. I mean, the healer tank goes in, he gets, he does his thing, and then the healer's in the back healing him, and the DPS light everything up, and that's the experience throughout the entire dungeon. Every mob set, every boss, same strategy. Tank goes in, DPS, DPS, healer, keeps everyone alive. That's pretty much it, you know, in a nutshell. And in Guild Wars 2, you know, depending on the combination of professions that you have, the whole experience could be completely different, mm-hmm. you know, and that's not even taking into effect the different dynamics that they have within the dungeon to change things up, you know, like I remember one of the developers talking about if you walk past a certain area of the dungeon that's you wouldn't normally pass by, and then all of a sudden there's a chance that all of a sudden an ogre could come bashing through the wall and you'd have to fight him all of a sudden. You know, it's just like that will add its own additional elements to the changeability of the dynamic of the experience.
Kind of so it, so you're saying basically there are like dynamic events within dungeons as well?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay,
and
that's cool.
I think that's fantastic. You know? Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so the combat, I mean, to me it feels like the combat is something that I'm just going to have to, you know, try out myself, the group combat, because I played it by myself, but it was, you know, a lot different. I just wonder about how I'm going to adapt to things like that, because I'm very role-oriented, and we need crowd control, and we need, not necessarily that we need a backline healer, but we need crowd control, we need aggro control. And if it's like you said, you know, where it's kind of proximity based with the aggro, I think that would be interesting, because then you wouldn't, you know, a lot of times right now, you know, you find the monsters trying to get around your character to get to the back line to get that healer, because that's their one track mind, you know, that's all they have in their mind, because that's the way the AI is set up. Well, it would be nice and more realistic, you know, if they would pay attention to the people who are hitting them in the legs, you know, with a mace, you know, it's like, it's like that's the one who's pissing them off, so they're going to fight that one. So yeah, that makes sense. I really like that. I think that would be, that'd be pretty interesting to try out.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess more with the dungeons, what were some other complaints in the forums about what they heard about the dungeons?
Well, I don't know if I would say that they were complaints really so much. It's just a matter of people expecting the experience to work like the traditional dungeons have in other MMOs, and it's just really not. I haven't heard a whole lot of complaints by way of that. It was really, I think, more than anything, actually, now that I think about it, it was more just the misunderstanding of group dynamic within the dungeons.
Oh, okay.
One thing though that I did come across in the comments section of Ruby's Flamesinker Chronicles, the titled "This Just Might Work," one person was talking about gear within dungeons, and that people will be grinding out gear with specific stats on it in order to, you know, fulfill roles. You know, we've already talked about the fact that the roles are not traditional, like a tank. There's no gear with stats on it that make you a better tank, you know, unless you spec into those yourself with your traits and things like that. So, but as far as grinding gear goes, and this is just a personal love that I got for this game, is that I can't tell you how many times I've had things ninja'd from me or gone into a dungeon and not received any loot because it either didn't drop or somebody beat me, you know, beat it from me. And it doesn't work like that in Guild Wars 2. You know, when we finished the explorable dungeon, we got 40 globs of ecto. Like, I don't know if they're planning on changing that to actual tokens, but that was, when I clicked on the vendor, the globs of ecto were the currency to purchase the new gear and things like that. So, yeah, it was kind of funny. It was kind of a surreal to see the little pink globs.
Well, okay. So Ruby, he mentioned your column, and in that column you said you kind of started out like, you know, I wasn't too keen on the dungeons, but then I changed my mind. I mean, do you want to explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, because I actually still do have some concerns. I think they're mostly personal concerns in relation to my playstyle, but at first I was like, you know, how is this, I mean, this is challenging content. How is this going to work with only 5 people? I just really didn't get the, I guess the dynamic, I'm looking for the right words. I just honestly could not see how challenging content would work in a game that was designed for large-scale play when you were limited to only 5 people. And I kind of went in going, I hope they know what they're doing. And part of that, and this is something I'm still not crazy about, but again, I think it's just me. Part of it was that, to me, the biggest attraction of an MMO is playing with people.
Yeah.
And I don't like being told I can only play with 4.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of me. But I think I have this thing in my head that they've been working so hard to get away from the, what they call it, a CORPG?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they were calling Guild Wars. Yeah. And they've done so much to get away from that, and then they stuff us in a dungeon with only 5 people. Mm. But, and that's, again, a lot of that is just because of my personal play style. Now that I've played it, the dynamics work really well.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so impressed. I'm like, that's like Dan and I were both saying earlier. Once we got into the rhythm and figured out how all of this worked, it was amazing. I mean, so impressed with it.
Yeah.
But I still have concerns about the small 5-person feel to this content.
Have they said anything about that's it? That it's all going to be 5-person?
They said...
Sorry, go ahead.
They said the dungeons are 5 people. Are there going to be dungeons for more? I honestly...
Like, there's no raid group option or anything like that?
I don't think so. You know, and I've been thinking about this. I saw a couple of comments about, you know, for people that love raids, just because the dungeon content is only for 5 people, I don't think that people are going to not get their raid fix, honestly. I mean, it's like, there's 8 dungeons in this game that they're starting out with. You know, when it launches, there will be 8 dungeons. And that's, you know... If you're looking for dungeons to be your time to hang out with your friends, it's really not a whole lot of dungeons. I mean, the entirety of Guild Wars 1 was instanced, you know, and you could take 8 people in there. You know, if you had more than that, you'd have to split up and things like that, and there will always be that dynamic. But think about it this way, Ruby, and this to me is one of the great aspects to Guild Wars 2, and that is that Don't worry about the 8 dungeons. The 8 dungeons would be something that you do on the side with a couple of your close friends. But like the entirety of the massively overpowered guild could all just say, let's meet at this place, and just, you know, the dynamic events all scale to the amount of people that are there. You just get a whole, you know, 40 people from your guild over to a certain dynamic event. Can you imagine that pirate town with 40-plus people all running around, scaled up to that much? I mean, it would be chaos. It would be so awesome to me.
And it would probably hurt less than it did when we did it before. Because, ow.
Right about that.
Well, and that's actually something that you said there. This is why I'm not sitting there. This is why I'm not sitting here being like, well, I hate this and it sucks. Because this is like 1% of the world.
Yeah.
5% of the world. If you... And if it turns out, if the game launches, and I hate dungeons so bad, I absolutely cannot even stand it, there's so much more to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, it's just a very, very small part of the world. I enjoyed it. I still, and I think just what's going to happen is that I'm going to like them sometimes, but I'm going to prefer the world as a whole.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I mean, I think I'll play them. I don't think they're going to be my absolute favorite, but the challenge is very, very cool. It's a good training tool.
So are these dungeons across all levels? Like there are beginner area ones and higher level?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all over. We did about, what, level 27, level 30 in that range. I'm going to absolutely going to do story and explorable mode at least once in every one.
Yeah.
Because I need to see what's going on in there. I wouldn't have missed the Ascalon Catacombs for the world. Hmm. So, but that is my concern, that in such a large world, in something that is so far away from the instanced feel of Guild Wars that we know now, that these little 5-man things are in there, but I just don't think it's going to be that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's intruding on the world at large. I'm not that worried.
You know, and also, I hate to bring this up, but I think SOTOR is only going to have 4-man groups, something like that.
Are they really?
I don't know if it's going to be throughout the whole game like that, but from what I've seen and what I've heard, that a lot of it's going to be four-man. So we can always say Guild Wars 2, one man, one more man.
Bigger than SOTOR. I don't know. I'm going to give SOTOR another shot, too, so I don't want to rag on it too much.
No, I'm just saying that it seems like it's that's all exactly like you're saying, and I do actually share that concern. It's like I want to play, you know, if I wanted to play with four other friends, I would go play on the Xbox, you know, or I would play another game that's not massively multiplayer. It's just a multiplayer game. But then it's exactly like you said, too. You take into consideration those scalable, dynamic events, you know, where you could get tons of your friends. And there you go. That's the massively part of it. You know?
Yeah. Well, and somebody else pointed out, and you know what? As soon as they said this, I was like, oh, fun! Somebody said, you know, you can split up your guild into, like, three or four groups and have dungeon races.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I totally want to do that.
There we go. Guildcast contest, right?
There you
get
go.
Everybody into vent.
Yeah.
Chaos. Yes!
All three groups trying to coordinate their own experience.
Oh,
but you know what? That would be cool because of the unexpected stuff that happens in there. Especially in explorable mode. I mean, you could have 15 people on there. Everybody's having a completely different experience. I think it would be so much fun.
Yeah.
I feel so much better about these now that I got my hands on them. Because I really was, how on earth is this going to work? How are you going to have this challenging of content in a world that is designed to be so big and force it down to five people? I don't see how this is going to work. And then I got my hands on it, and I was like, oh, well, that's how it's going to work. Okay, that's all right then.
One more thing I was going to say, and this isn't really a concern so much as I just wanted to share it because I know there have been a couple of questions of people wondering about it, is the wipe mechanic. When people, like when groups totally wipe, when there's nobody around to res, the way that it works is when you first enter a dungeon, there's a waypoint that's right at the beginning when you go in. And if you die, you can click, you know, you pull up the map and you click on the waypoint and you start there. At specific strategic points within the dungeon, as you progress, new waypoints will be opened up. I think they usually have them tied to specific boss locations, like when you complete a certain boss fight, there's a waypoint that will open up right there that you will be able to use for interaction with, like when you die. When everyone dies, you just open it back up and click on the waypoint, which I think is great. You know, how many corpse runs have I done? You know, I'm thinking back to like vanilla WoW, when you died in Molten Core, the walk from the Thorian Brotherhood's place to down below where you'd get into Molten Core again is just, I've got that ingrained in my mind. I could do it with my eyes closed and know where I was going the entire time. I made that stupid run so many times.
Yeah, that's the time, when you're running there, you're spending that time thinking, why am I playing this game? Like, why am I doing this right now? So if you take that out of there, you don't have to worry about that.
Just additional time to fume at the fact that you failed again.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. Well, cool. Was there anything else you wanted to kind of address?
Not right off the top of my head. If there's something you guys want to talk about or something really quick, I can go through my notes and see if there's anything that I missed.
Well, I was going to say, too, what we should do is get, if anyone has any questions, you know, specific questions for Dan, we can, you know, maybe answer those on a future show. Or, you know, just email us, sean@guildcast.com, and we'll ask Dan the man. What the what it is?
I still like my name better, but whatever.
Your name is wait a minute. What name did you have for me?
Oh, I forget. I think it was Dan the Man.
Oh
no, I don't know. Can I say it on the podcast, or do you have to beat me out?
I refused to go by? Is that?
Yeah, you said you didn't have enough sequins.
Oh yeah. I don't care. Whatever.
So anyway.
Okay.
No, I wanted to call him. I just think we need to jazz his name up a little bit. Oh. I like Dan the Man. That works.
Ruby wanted to make me into a pimp of some kind, I think.
I totally did.
Oh, yeah.
Pimp Daddy Dan.
That's right.
It rolls off the tongue. I love it so much.
You know, I was in elementary school. I got called Danny Panny all the time.
Oh,
yes! Because I'm sure you loved that.
Yeah, I...
No, not so much.
Sean's like, what the hell has happened to this podcast?
I won't even tell you the names I was called. Shoestring.
I'm for Sean. Sean Spawn.
Well, it's mostly the last name. Shoestring, Screwster, stuff like that. Yeah.
You know what? I went through elementary school with a bunch of prepubescent boys who realized my name rhymed with booby. I don't want to hear it. I don't feel sorry for either of you.
Okay, you win.
And prepubescent boys really like to say that.
Yeah, I was just going to say they just like saying the word. Yeah.
They really, really did. So, yeah, I have no sympathy. I'm sorry.
Oh, boy. Well, you want to get on to... actually, before we get to the email, we have some other news, too, we wanted to talk about. Winds of Change?
Yeah, that's Winds of Change dropped.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I don't know. Have either of you gotten to play it yet? I know it just dropped the other day.
I haven't.
I haven't yet, no.
Oh, okay, well... I don't want to spoil.
I saw all of the crazy posts on it, though, in Twitter.
Yeah? What was my Twitter?
Yeah, your Twitter.
Some of the, I was live tweeting on that channel. Seriously, I was like directly quoting everybody. Okay, there's good and there's bad here. First of all, they said 43 quests, so this is kind of being released in stages, as I understand it. So we just got the first stage. And from a story point of view, it's kind of cool. I'm trying to figure out how to say, I don't want to like completely just rip on it because there's a lot of good here. From a story point of view, what you're doing in this phase is they want you to go around and clean up the last of the afflicted from the zones in Kainang City, in that area. So you go get the first quest and it's, hey, go clean out all the afflicted in this area. Okay, so you got into that instance, and you're like, yeah, we did it. We're all excited, because there were six of us in the group, and then we heroed up with a couple extras. So we're all excited. You know, we got the first one. It was hard, and I'll get to that in a second. And then we come back, and he's like, okay, now go to this instance and clean up all the afflicted there. So we do that, and we're like, ugh, we just did something like this, but okay, whatever, we'll do it. We get back for quest three. Guess what he wants us to do?
Clean up the afflicted.
Clean up the afflicted in another zone. And by this time, we're like, okay, wait a minute. And that's, every quest was, go to this zone, clean up the afflicted. And that gets really boring after a while. You know?
Yeah.
We got to the final quest, and this was actually in the evening, U.S. time. And three of us were in Europe, so it's like, you know, ridiculous o'clock. And we get to the last quest, and he's like, I don't know, I can't remember what he said, but we were like, oh, so this one's a... really big afflicted. It's like a 30-foot tall afflicted. And this girl from Norway on vet, she goes, that's it. I'm going to bed. I mean, because really, that's what it was. Go out there. And you know what I kept thinking of? Oh, look, I swung a sword. Oh, look, I swung a sword. Hey, I swung a sword again. Do you remember that quote? That was Colin Johansson said that in the manifesto video.
Oh,
and
to
practically a meme.
Yeah.
Because he said, we don't want it to be like, hey, I swung a sword. Hey, I swung a sword again. Oh, swung a sword again. And that is all I could think of while I was doing these quests.
Yeah.
So that sucked.
Yeah.
But there was good stuff. We get out there, and that's what... I guess we went in a little cocky. Because most of us, I mean, in our... And it's not that we're all that lead. It's that most of us have just been playing for a very long time. We've done all the normal mode content. So we're like, all right, you know, just, I don't know, throw together whatever. It's just normal mode, you know, string some cans together, whatever. So we get out there, and we're thinking, okay, this is cool. Just clean up some afflicted, and then we'll see what comes next. They're all, like, between level 24 and 28, and they're using the current player meta builds against us.
Oh, nice.
And, I mean, there was, like, a screaming. You know, that one's Signet of Spirits. That one's Signet of Spirits. There's no monks. And we couldn't kill anything. Nothing's done. No, I take that back. There were monks, because they were using Ray of Judgment on us.
Oh.
And so we're trying to figure out what the heck is going on, because the monks are smiters. We can't kill anything. We're all yelling our heads off on vent. And then somebody realized that the necros are the healers. And we've been focusing on the monks. I mean, they took everything that we knew. They took all the meta builds and just kicked our butts with them.
See, they
took everything we expected and turned it completely inside out.
You thought they weren't paying attention. They were.
Dude, they were paying so much attention. It was not even funny. And, I mean, we're running around in these familiar areas, and all of a sudden there's this this Japanese girl, one of my friends, Humie, was on there, and she just yells on vent. I mean, like, wordless yelling. And we're like, what? She goes, I don't know. I'm just on fire. That was the whole thing. I mean, that was, we have no clue what's happening, but we know it hurts really bad. So it was a serious, serious challenge. The 30-foot-tall afflicted, the giant afflicted at the very end, was a Wemo with Shield of Absorption. Hmm. My screen was full of yellow zeros. We couldn't touch it. So it was completely, I mean, that, it was a serious challenge.
So you think the monotony at the beginning was to kind of let your guard down?
Oh, it was still monotonous.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, it was still go clean up afflicted here. Now go clean up afflicted there. Now go clean up the afflicted over there. I mean, and I think I've said this in a past, I don't remember which podcast, but I was like, make me figure this out. And that's what they did with the builds. I mean, we had to slink back to Kaining Center with our tails between our legs and regroup. And from a story point of view, I liked it from a story point of view because I know there's more coming. Because they're saying, okay, this is the process. We have to finish this cleanup of all these afflicted, and then we can move on. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of quests. We found some quests that are marked hard mode only. Mm. We haven't tried those yet because we're afraid. But I assume they're hard. There are new weapons. You get, ministerial commendations for completing these quests, and then there's a new arms dealer in Kaining Center that has, and I'm not familiar with old weapon skins. I know a lot of people are really into that, but I'm kind of a noob on that. But they were saying some of these are like classic weapon skins that are brought back.
Oh.
Huh. The girl from Norway that went to bed, she and I are over there, and we get all excited. We're like, new weapons, new weapons. We are such snobs. We open up the thing, and we're like, ugh, they're purple. We didn't want anything to do with them. We were like, those are purple weapons. And somebody else was like, I think you can dye them. I mean, they don't have to stay that color. We're going, no. They're not gold or green.
Yeah.
Those are purple weapons. And we like stalked off with our noses in the air.
Well, I mean, purple is pretty low. Maybe I'm a snob, too. I don't know.
We were both, I mean, I'm not wielding anything purple. Ew.
Purple.
Yeah, we were just, so some of the other guildies kind of laughed at us a little bit, but we need our gold and green weapons. It's important.
I like purple with sequins.
Yes, totally. You need, I think there was like Pimp Daddy staff.
So. Nice. Yeah.
That would be awesome. We've got new weapons. There are new contests. I don't know, that's another thing on Guildcast. There are new costumes that are pretty cool. For the first time, I have not bought them. I like rip my wallet in half getting to the costumes, and I haven't got a chance to do that yet. But they look awesome. They look very, very good.
Can you describe them a little bit?
They're kind of militaristic.
Oh, cool.
A very Canthan militaristic look.
Wait, is that like band uniform?
Canthan? No, it's so much more badass than a band uniform.
Okay, good. You're
talking about like your mezzo.
I have flashbacks and scars still, mental scars from the Canthan mesmer, male mesmer uniform. It's horrible.
It's like kind of long lines. I mean, it's a very Asian militaristic look, and it looks good. I like it quite a bit. There were a lot of people running around in them. Actually, one of our guildies, we were talking in guild chat about gathering in Kaining Center to, you know, do these quests. Well, one of our guildies had bought the costumes, and he wanted to show off a little bit. So he zones over to where we are, and he kind of runs in front of us, and we're like, oh, look, he's got the costumes. Well, all of us girls were like, get your female character. We want to see. And then he was like, you guys, I want to go do stuff. I just wanted to show you. And we were like, yeah, you're going to show us everything. So switch to one of your female characters and come back. But we really liked them. Somebody told me there was a clipping issue here or there. I didn't see it, so I don't know.
Hmm. Well, that's cool.
They are very cool. The Ministry of Purity is the NPC. That's like the group responsible for doing all this cleanup. Mm-hmm. And we've actually turned that, we're swearing up and down, there's some sort of like sexual restriction group. And if anybody's kissing in Kaineng Center, the Ministry of Purity is all over that.
Oh, yeah. That's
so
probably not what it is.
Yeah, I think really, and see, this is what happens when you send us out to kill the same things in six different zones. We get bored and start making fun of content.
Start making up new stuff.
Yes, we just write our own.
Yeah.
But no, from a story point of view, it was a good, it was almost like we have to do this cleanup drudgery to see what's next. And I'm dying to get out to the Jade Sea. I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But cool. It was, I'll tell you what, they made us work for those rewards. That hurt so bad.
Those purples, huh?
Well, there was a lot of XP, and yeah, I've just got these things in my storage. I'm like, I don't know, I don't want a purple weapon. Yuck. So I don't know what I'm going to do with my little ministerial commendations yet.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's Winds of Change.
I'm sure we'll talk more about that later, you know, like you said, we get a little farther. Also, I wanted to talk about one other thing before we get into the email. We started the contest that we mentioned last week, the engine contest for GuildSite. And what it is essentially is we want to see that, now if you go to guildcast.com, you'll see this, the complete rules for this. But we want to see your guild. Like, we want to see what, you know, what makes you up. We want to see a picture of your guild, either like an action shot or just like a posing kind of a thing in your guild hall or whatever. But we also want to hear about why, you know, we want to hear about your guild. We want to hear why you like the guild, you know, what some funny stories, something like that. But the only thing, I guess, the one restriction that we ask is that you have to be either a guild leader or a guild officer. So, I mean, if you're not and you really like your guild, you can just tell your guild leader or a guild officer to write, you know, write something up for you. But that's, we just want the kind of, you know, the management of the guild to write it into us and tell us about this. So what we're going to do is, once we get all these entries in, we actually have a few already, which is really cool. We're going to get them together, and then on July 25th, which is, it's like a week from Monday, we are going to, Ruby and I are going to look these over and check them out and just kind of see which ones we, you know, like as our favorites. And the very favorite, the first one, will get an ultimate, a year of ultimate package from Engine. Now this includes like a forum, a Mumble server, which is very similar to Vent. You get full customization of the site, you know, where there's widgets and there's, you know, skins and themes. You get full members customization support, all this kind of stuff. You get let's see. Oh, there's also like a game, in-game character support where you can add your character information into the site. It's really cool stuff. Fully customizable. We use it for Massively. We love it. We actually don't do too much with it. I mean, we have like our forum and stuff like that, but we haven't really explored all the craziness, you know, that you can do with it. But it's pretty cool. So that the first one will be ultimate. That'll be the first prize winner, and then second place will be a premium. A 1 year of premium, and premium is pretty close to ultimate. It has a lot of the, you know, similar features. I think it's like less space that you can put on there, and, you know, a few less customizable options, and, you know, things like that. But it still has a lot of the bells and whistles. So yeah, we'll be giving those out probably at the end of July or the beginning of August after we decide. But the deadline to get those in is July 25th. So get those in. And again, if you want to check it out, kind of, you know, what's possible, I guess, if you can go over to, is it massively.engine.com? I think that's what it is, right?
Yep. Let me load it up just to be on the safe side.
And engine is E-N-J-I-N.
Yep. Massively.engine.com.
Yeah, check that out, and that's kind of our Massively community portal type thing. But again, like I said, we don't really use it to its full potential anyway, so you can do some crazy stuff with it.
Yeah, there are like, I mean, I've actually, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't apply to us that I went in there and eliminated. Yeah. I mean, they're like, there's like a whole raid readiness calendar. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's so much stuff that's gaming specific. Ours is more, it's kind of an annex to Massively, so we're, you know, we use the chat room and the forums and the calendar.
Oh, yeah, chat room. I forgot about that.
Yeah, but if you're in there, and we use the Mumble server. But if you're in there for gaming purposes, my gosh, there's so much you can do.
Yeah, it's specifically made for gamers. It's really cool. Really good stuff. So yeah, that's a pretty cool package, actually. I mean, I think Ultimate is like, I'm not looking at it right now, but I think it's like $20 a month normally. And then when, you know, to get a year of that, that's a lot of money. So, yeah. So it's a pretty cool package.
I want to say it was something like $250 for the year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and of course I can't find the pricing really, really quickly. Sorry.
Yeah, but it's a lot.
Yeah. It's good stuff. $23.96 a month for the Ultimate package.
That's like what Ruby gets an hour, I think, right?
That's what I get a month, $23.96 a month. I'm sad. I use it to buy gum.
Oh, boy. Well, let's get into this email then. We have quite a few.
Yay.
Okay, so this first one says, Dear Sean and Ruby, since day one of the original podcast, I have been an avid listener of Guildcast. I also listened to and thoroughly enjoyed OMGRL. That's a podcast I did a long time ago with Jenna. It's kind of like an advice podcast, I guess, except we were complete a-holes on it, right?
You guys were so awesome.
Anyway, when the first era, or whatever you may call it, of Guildcast ended, I was quite upset. Now you're back, and I'm very glad. Now I can get my fix on Guild Wars 2 news and ward away some of the impatience. Now on to my question. I've been keeping up on as much news as I can cling to, but I have not heard anything about the number of characters. Do you two think that they will give us enough slots to make one of each race or one of each profession? Or do you think we will get even less than that and be forced to pay for more? Furthermore, do you believe that with the new setup of the game, we will find ourselves spending even more time with only one character as opposed to spreading the love to many characters? I just thought I would ask for your opinion. I love and have loved the show. Please keep up the good work. Everything that you do is much appreciated. Sincerely, Nicholas.
Oh, thank you, Nicholas.
So, yeah, characters. Now, we do know that they're going to be selling character slots, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I believe so. Dan, do you know
offhand? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. But you know what? If they start us out with fewer character slots than there are professions, I think they're crazy.
I think they will, though. I think we've talked about this before, actually.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Because I remember saying that it would make sense from a business point of view for them to have fewer and then, you know, kind of entice you and say, well, you could buy more if you want to and, you know, try out the rest of the professions.
Well, I don't like that.
I guess that
sounds greedy, but I think we figured out you could make 40 different characters when you combine, if you do all the different races and classes, you could make 40 completely different characters. I don't think in the face of that, starting you out with 8 is unreasonable.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
All I know is that it'll hit my pocketbook pretty drastically because I fully intend on making multiples of all professions and races.
Yeah.
I have an addiction to alts.
Well, I mean, maybe also they'll kind of do what's going on now with Guild Wars 1 where they're going to anticipate people buying multiple accounts. You know, with no monthly fee, you don't really have to worry about that. Maybe people will do that. I don't know.
I don't know. I think 8 to start is very, very reasonable.
Maybe it'll be like City of Heroes where there's like 20 or something. I forgot. It's like insane how many.
Wow. Seriously?
There.
Wow.
Yeah, DC Universe Online is 16.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Whoa. When I found, like, really? And you want to know what? All 16 slots are filled on my account.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you guys. I don't get how you do that. I'm so faithful to my main, and I'm only, after years of playing in the past year, I've just branched out to alts.
Oh, boy.
I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
I'm going to have to in Guild Wars 2. I'm going to have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you'll want to experience all of the starting areas at least, so at least 5 right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, man.
Maybe that's what it'll be. They'll give 5 to start for all of the races and then maybe expand on that. I don't know. Either way, I'm probably going to be putting down stupid amounts of money just to
eventually. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to start giving blood now, I think, and start saving up.
Start selling your blood.
Plasma.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on to this next one. It says, Dear Sean and Ruby. Actually, it says Ruby and Sean, but, you know, I just...
But you're the boss, so you can do that.
Yeah, It says, after perusing the Guild Wars 2 articles and comments, I've noticed quite a contention between people about having no defined roles and what that means. Correct me if I'm wrong. Now, this is actually what we just talked about, so we might actually answer his question here. Correct me if I'm wrong, but people fail to understand that there are roles. What there isn't are defined roles for professions. Each profession can take the necessary support, like healing, buffs, etc., control, tanking, etc., and damage. The problem with the Holy Trinity is not with the idea of tanking slash healing slash DPS, but the idea that only specific classes can fulfill those roles. Guild Wars 2 will have tanking, healing, DPS, but every class can fulfill those roles. Some people argue that no matter what, theory crafters will find the control profession and build, the support profession and build, etc., and I have no doubt that that will be the case. The Guardian is obviously better suited to a support role than, say, the Thief. However, the beauty of the Guild Wars 2 system lies in the fact that since every profession can, to some extent, fulfill every role, encounters can be designed around the entire group's ability. Where one profession might be best at tanking and control, it doesn't matter if the boss can easily overwhelm a single character. Instead, an encounter might require everyone to switch to a more durable build to mitigate and heal the damage, and then later require everyone to switch to DPS to spike damage. My thoughts centered around a theoretical encounter where the boss has invulnerable and does high damage and then switches to a vulnerable form. In conclusion, each profession will be better or worse at control, support, or DPS, but indeed will be able to step into any of those roles. As such, encounters will be designed around the total ability of a group to control, support, DPS, and is the reason that the story mode dungeons can be completed by any combination of professions. More difficult encounters may require more balanced groups, most likely will require better situational awareness when and who should switch roles to meet the challenges the developers have designed. Sorry for the long email. Sincerely, Stone. Please excuse any typos. I'm writing this on my phone during class.
Oh, Stone, pay attention.
Actually, you did pretty good, though. Okay, so this is what we were talking about before, but I think he actually explained it really well, where he's saying that it's not the misunderstanding of the roles themselves, it's the misunderstanding of assigning those roles to specific professions.
I don't know. I he's got some great points, and for the most part, he's really spot on. But like I said, there really isn't a tank and heals roles. I mean, he was saying that people can fill those roles, but those aren't roles that people will be filling. For example, I was playing Warrior, okay? Traditionally, people have known you put on a sword and a board, and you can run in, and you can just take all this damage. And in Guild Wars 2, it was not that way. For example, we got to this spider boss. I think Ruby knows what I'm talking about, because it was the first kind of encounter in the explorable mode. We get to this room, okay? On the room, there's just hundreds of little spiders. No, not hundreds. There's just a crap load, though, and it's just the whole room is filled with these little spiders, okay? And we start going in there and damaging. We wipe like 3 times as we try to move our way through it until we came up with a strategy that worked, and we were able to kill all these little spiders. Well, as soon as we did, this big giant spider shows up, okay? Boss fight. Here we go. So I throw on my sword and my shield, and I go running in. I'm like, oh yeah, all I have to do, if I'm going to take damage, I'll just do my shield block, okay? I go running in, I do my shield block, which has like a 15-second cooldown, but it only lasts for like 5 seconds. So, you know, when it all was over, the spider squashed me. I died. Game over for me, you know?
What?
So I switched to my map, and I go to the waypoint, which wasn't too far away, and I start running back. Well, the thief went running in, too, and as soon as I died, the spider turned to the thief and squashed the thief. And so we're like, and I think it was either Colin or one of the other developers behind me. He said, you're not going to want to get too close to that boss. And I was like, no, okay. And so we, all of us, busted out our ranged weapons and were... And I guess the boss was not the kind of boss where he follows you. He was just sat up there on the top of the steps and was shooting these huge poison, like AOE poison things that would hit the ground and like bubble on the ground or whatever. Looked like something a necromancer would throw down. And you had to be dodging out of that. But he was throwing them down all over the place, so you had to be careful not to dodge out of one and into the other. And so we were all sitting at range. You know, I pull out my longbow, and we just, you know, and the whole dynamic of the fight changed. And you know, I think that's one example of how traditional fights, or the fights in the Guild Wars 2 dungeons, are not, don't follow the traditional structure. There's no tank. There's no healing. I mean, there's different ways to react to the situation, and you just got to find out what clicks for that fight. But you know, yeah, it just I don't know if I would agree with the fact that he was saying that people can still tank, people can still heal, because it in the experience that I had, I don't know, maybe, and I had this one experience, you know. I played it for 4 hours. That doesn't make me an expert by any means, you know. There may be other experiences where you can be more involved like that, where a warrior can go in with a sword and a shield and you know, and keep its attention for whatever amount of time while everyone else sits back and DPSs it. But I don't think that ArenaNet intended for fights to be so boring. You know, to me, that's boring.
Yeah.
You know, we'll just stand back and just light it up. No, they've designed, at least in the catacombs, in my experience, they designed the fights in there to require you to be moving, to be thinking about what your next move is going to be. Do I need to switch my weapon set out and then rush in and do this, or do I need to jump back out and heal myself? You know, this is the kind of dynamic that ArenaNet, I think, was shooting for. Not so much this idea of somebody, the warrior puts on his sword and his shield and goes in and just takes all the damage while everyone else stands back and DPSs and, you know.
I think I like that the idea. It seems like we're so used to traditionally, you know, when you fail and you get a party wipe or something, you fail a dungeon, and somebody will say, "Oh, well, you know, Eric, can you go get your tank? And Johnny, can you go get your healer?" Like they're switching the same roles but different people, or they're switching. You know, oh, we need another DPS. Well, let's get rid of, you know, our two monks. We'll have one monk, and then we'll have, you know, another DPS. Like, that's kind of the traditionally, that's how we've changed our strategy in the past. And it seems like now it's like we're getting beyond that to where, oh, well, maybe we need to just use ranged weapons, or we need to hide over on this side. We need to get it from this side, or we need to, you know, things we can't even imagine right now. Those types of strategies that really break themselves out from that box. And I think that's pretty much what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there will still be these roles, support and control and damage. Okay. These are roles that do exist, but I'm hoping that people will get away from the idea that one, or, you know, that one of them is required to complete the dungeon. You can have a group of all controlling characters and still effectively make it through that dungeon. You don't have to have your supportive elementalist or guardian throwing down their support abilities. You can do it with just control. But the thing that I want to try and emphasize is how awesome it is that the dynamic changes when that happens. So your experience is different, you know. And I think that's a fantastic concept with dungeons, is just the everything. It's a new experience every time. You know?
Yeah, I like that. All right, well, let's go on to this next email here. This is from our friendly neighborhood necromancer, Mortifact Necrosis.
Oh, Mortifact!
It says, "Hey, all, here's another email from your favorite neighborhood necromancer."
Hey, you're right.
I just wanted to ask you guys a few more questions in addition to the ones I sent in my email last week. Oh, I think I missed the email. I recently watched an interview with Eric Flanham at GDC 2011 where he talks about the dice system and hints at siege combat in World versus World Combat. What are your guys' take on these unlockable colors, the unlockable colors open dice system, and his comparisons to World versus World Combat to that of RTS games with you as the infantry? And then he actually has a link to the video that he's talking about, and I can put that in the show notes. But do you guys know about this stuff? Like, well, let's start with the die system. What do we think about the die system?
Okay, there is not a thing about the die system I do not absolutely love. I'm sorry, I know it's someone's going to scream at me for being a fangirl. There's nothing about the die system that I'm not crazy about. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I agree.
It's crazy to think that they improved upon a system that I was in love with originally. I mean, the mixing of the dies in Guild Wars 1 I always thought was amazing.
Yeah.
You know.
But you know, I love Kristen Perry's quote from last year's die blog, ArenaNet blog about the die system. She said, and this is what I like so much, she said, you will never look like an undyed dork because you're out of turquoise. Because once you've unlocked those colors, they're yours. You don't have to hope you get a blue die drop, or you don't have to save up to get whatever at the die vendor.
Yeah.
That's just it. You've got this palette that you have unlocked is yours for good. Anything you want.
Yeah.
And they all look good on the gear too. Like for example, when you go talk to the NPC who gets you into the dungeon, you automatically get bumped up to level 35, which is the minimum requirement for the dungeon, and you get all new armor that's equivalent to that level. And so one of my favorite things to do is every time I got into the dungeon, either story mode or explorable, I'd always just open up the palette while everyone else is running off to start doing damage. I'm like sitting on the screen and I'm like choosing, oh, let's see, that red looks good on that part. No, let's put this, let's see what that color does right there. You know, it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah.
It is. Well, and I love, she said the colors are kind of keyed to what material you're putting them on. If you take copper and stick it on a metal armor piece, it's going to look completely different than if you stick the copper on like a fabric armor piece.
Yeah.
And I think it's just so cool. And honestly, you know what? I'm kicking myself now. I deliberately did not open up the die system while we were at Seattle because I knew I would still be sitting there. I would still be sitting there now.
You'd be a stowaway.
Yes, I'd like be hiding in the ceiling tiles to come down and dye my armor after everybody went home. But it is, my gosh, it is absolutely one of my favorite things about the game. Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah. I should look for that old dev blog from Kristen and put that in the show notes.
I'm looking for that now.
Yeah, it does explain it quite well. And then the second part, he asks about he says that there's a hint at siege combat in World vs. World, and there were comparisons to an RTS game with you as the infantry. What do you guys think about that? Have you heard that?
I think I've heard a little bit. I think it's pretty cool. I'm, waiting to hear more about PvP.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say that I think that is one of those things that we haven't heard too much about, but just the hints are there.
I have some information on PvP.
Uh-oh. Okay.
I don't know if Eric... I don't know. He didn't tell me not to say anything, but then again, I left kind of three-fourths of through the conversation because I had a headache, and I went upstairs to go lay down on the couch and take a nap. But during dinner, Eric Flanham was talking with my brother and I, and I can't remember who else was there. I think Ravius might have been there, and the gal from Incoming Gamers... I can't remember her name. The one with the hurt foot. Do you remember her
Bella.
Name?
That was Bella. Yeah.
Yeah, she might have been there as well. But Eric Flynn was talking about the PvP, and I was a little confused because he was saying that the arena PvP is something that you'll be able to get together with your friends and play, but I'm pretty sure he said the world PvP is not going to be something where you get together with your friends and you can just, queue up. I think he was saying it was going to work more like the way the grouping system works in Team Fortress 2, where you just are randomly, you could be with your friends, but you might be on a different team as your friends. Hmm. And I was a little confused by that because it doesn't make sense to me, because when do I want a PvP that I don't want to play with my friends on their team?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was confused by that. I mean, if I play a first-person shooter game, I'm okay with, I get together with my buddies and we fight against each other. But in a massively multiplayer online world, I want to be with my friends and I want to go out and destroy other people.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. If anyone from ArenaNet is listening to this and this is accurate by any means, please rethink this because I want to play with my friends in PvP. If my guild is on a specific realm and we go into world versus world versus world. I want to play with my guildmates. I don't want to be pitted against them. So just some food for thought. Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll, I'm sure we'll get clarifications on all this when I hope they do a PvP explanation dev blog pretty soon, because a lot of people are asking about that. A lot of people.
Yeah. And it's such a huge portion of what Guild Wars 1 was. I know a lot of people are huge about the PvP in Guild Wars 1. And so, you know, I know that once they get it all squared away, it's going to have a big effect on a lot of people who are sitting on the fence about Guild Wars 2 right now. So,
yeah. Well, cool. Let's move on to this next email. It says, "Hey, Sean." It doesn't say Ruby.
You're so happy.
I've been listening to Guildcast for a few months now, and I noticed that you sometimes plug community sites in your podcast, most recently gw2beast.com in your July 4th podcast. Being a member of an established community site myself, this got me thinking maybe I should shoot a message your way and see if you would mind helping us to expand our demographic. Uh-oh, what did I start? The community I'm talking about is teamlegacy.net. It's like one word, .net. We are an offshoot of Team Liquid and hope to someday become the arena junkies / elitist jerks of Guild Wars 2.
Woohoo!
If by some miracle this makes it on the podcast, I've got another sort of random question I'd like to ask. Oh, this is my favorite. Ruby, what does it take to start a career as a gaming journalist?
Well, let me tell you from experience. You watch what Sean does and try to do that. Sean hired me, man. That was my becoming a gaming journalist. So, I don't know.
So,
Sean,
how did the dynamic between you two begin then? If Sean hired you, just apply and you're like, "Hey, I'm really good at writing. Please hire me." And Sean was like, "Psh, of course."
Actually, you know what? I don't know how much Sean was only part of the hiring process. There was another person. And I don't really know what the dynamic there was. I just know that I got hired.
Oh, you're talking about Liz?
Yeah.
No, actually, well,
I mean, I really don't know how that all worked.
Okay, here, I'll explain it.
Here's a story.
This doesn't really have anything to do with, well, I guess, it does answer his question. Okay, Ruby and I have known each other for a long time. We were guildmates for a long time. Back when I did the original Guildcast. Actually, there is an episode of...
Ruby. No, we're not going to talk about this. No,
there is a video.
We will never speak of this again.
There's an old video, and I don't even remember. Was it part of the Guildcast Theater? I forgot.
No, it was not. No.
Yeah. So anyway, there's this old video, and I don't even know where it's at or anything. And you hear Ruby's voice in it. I asked her to help me out with a female voice, and she's the only girl I knew. No, I'm just kidding. And then, she helped me out with the voice of one of the characters in this video I made. And this is, I mean, this had to have been 2006, probably, somewhere around there.
It was, yeah, I think that was about right.
It was a long time ago. And so, I mean, we were, you know, guildmates for a while, and we were kind of were friends, you know, like, in the guild and things like that. So, but then she started writing blogs. You had that kind of a parent blog, right?
Yeah, we have, well, but there's like a family blog and...
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw that she could write.
I was just writing some stuff.
And we were actually looking to hire some people, and we did an open call out for writers, and she applied. And I knew, you know, there are a lot of aspects and kind of main things I look for in people when I hire them. And I'm kind of known for not hiring people the way... I'm trying not to insult Ruby here, but...
Why? Stop now.
I'm known for not hiring the people you would think that should be hired.
Actually makes complete sense.
Yeah. No, I mean, when we go, we have an open call out at Massively for people. I mean, we get ex-devs, we get, you know, big-time writers who come in and they're like, yeah, I've written for New York Times, I've written this, and I you know, I'm perfect for your job, you should hire me. And I throw those ones away, because those are the people who will be a pain in the butt to try to manage, you know what I mean? Cause, and I'm not, you know, saying
no,
they're all like
stars.
That. Yeah, pretty much. And what I'm looking for is someone who's going to be dedicated, someone who's going to be, that I know is going to be there, and who's going to be, you know, very passionate about the game that they're going to be talking about. And that's the way Ruby has always been. You know, she's always been very passionate about Guild Wars and MMOs, and it's like, you know, I know her, It's not so much just hiring a friend. You know, that's what's the word for that? I forget what that's called.
It's not nepotism. That's
nepotism. That's
no, but that's family, and that's why I laugh so hard, because you actually got accused of nepotism when you hired me. I'm like, we're not related.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it's not really that. It's just that, you know, I already knew what she was like. I mean, I heard, you know, Bo Hindman also kind of the same way. I knew what he was capable of. I knew his passion, things like that. So, I mean, going back to that, that's, you know, I'm not completely taking credit for Ruby, but...
I did create her.
I created this monster, and I have to apologize for it.
And then you promoted me. I think that was your second mistake.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I mean, Ruby just started out kind of writing, you know, family blog and things here and there. And now you mentioned Liz. It's funny because Liz was actually my boss. This is before I was the editor-in-chief at Massively. I was just a managing editor. And Liz was kind of like, I said, hey, I know this person, and she's really good, and, you know, she'll be dedicated and stuff like that, and so should we hire her? And she's like, whatever, go for it. This is all you. You know, she's kind of like, you hire everybody. So that was her part in it.
Yeah. But the very, very short version of this is start writing. I mean, you don't have to do it just because you got paid. That was like Sean said, I was already writing. My gosh, grammar and punctuation, for the love of all that is good and holy.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean, do you want to back me up on this?
Learn the differences between your, and your, and its, and its. And,
yes.
And there, and there. Learn
they
those.
And they, that, or then, and then.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then. Right.
But seriously,
except. I mean, just learn those things.
All those things. I mean, spelling and grammar, I cannot stress that enough. Because when Sean put out that open call out, and at Massively we do this to this day, when we put out a call out for writers, it says right there, if we find a typo, we stop reading.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, what's this person's name? Actalim. If you are looking to be a game journalist, I mean, that's what you have to do.
Mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, you need those basics in there. But in Ruby's case, of course, it was kind of who she knew, I mean, to an extent. But that's not all of it. You know, I don't want to make
I applied like everybody else. I mean, I went through the entire process.
You applied twice. This was the second time you applied, actually, right? Because the first time it was like you were going to start the family column. And
oh, that's right. We talked about, I forgot about that. And then Liz actually had someone else that she wanted for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, this is, it's, you know, she tried again. There she
is. And that's the thing. If it doesn't work out the first time, just keep going. It's going to happen. And for heaven's sake, keep writing. You don't have to, you know, just because if you're not getting paid for it, big whoop.
Yeah.
And write about something that you care about. If I went and applied for a job at a papermaking industry blog or something, I would suck so bad.
Yeah, I mean, you would probably be surprised at how many applications I get from people who are like, yeah, I'm a reporter, and I play games, I have an Xbox, I'd love to write about MMOs, and I'm like, wait, what?
No, write about what you love.
You have to know, like, you have to love MMOs. Whatever topic it is, you have to love it. And that was a very, I guess that was a kind of a sideways tangent there, but...
No, that's okay. Yeah. You know what, though? Now I'm thinking about when I got hired. And you know what I loved the most were the people that insisted that I only got hired because I'm female.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? That was so awesome. And that really, I like to think that doesn't have anything to do with it.
No.
Unless Sean's got a thing for middle-aged housewives that I didn't know about.
No. But I mean, it's funny because this is also a tangent, but we were recently accused of not having a female voice on Massively. And I'm looking at the staff and I'm going,
wait, what?
Remember that? Remember we were accused of not having a female voice?
Oh, I forgot about that.
And I'm like,
I completely forgot about that.
I'm counting the leads on the site, and there's one man, and then there's two women. And
we're the bosses, like, man.
Yeah, and I'm looking at all other gaming sites, and I'm like, nope, no women there, no women there, no women there. I mean, yeah. So that was a pretty good time.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, they didn't have Ruby, so.
Yeah, she's. That's...
Well, thank God, there's only one.
Whatever.
So, that's just...
That's it?
Yep,
that's a giant tangent.
But seriously, learn to spell, learn grammar, learn punctuation. I'm not even kidding.
And it does sound silly, but it's such a lost art.
But it's not, and it's so embarrassing when you go to these sites and you read just horrible grammatical errors. Be professional about it. I'm just going to keep saying that because it's so important. And that's like Sean said, it's a lost art.
All right, okay, so next email. let's go on to that. Hi, Sean and Ruby and guest. Ooh, they predicted. They knew.
Never. Or maybe
Sean
they were
totally wrote this
from last week.
Yeah, I think they were. I'm probably going to be rolling Norn, but I was wondering if I should roll a warrior or a guardian. Wait.
Warrior.
Yes, you should roll both.
I want to be the
Conan. Yeah, that's right. Both.
I want to be the Conan the Barbarian type with a single target focus and a greatsword. I was initially thinking warriors would be the obvious fit there, but after watching gameplay of several two-handed warriors and hearing that they are more about AoE damage rather than single target, I began to look around to see if someone else would better fit their role. Would the Guardian serve as a better two-handed single target profession? I have been listening to Guildcast for the past few weeks, and I'm loving it. I've played WoW since Burning Crusade, and I'm really getting bored of the tank heal DPS mechanic and a PvP system that doesn't require a full keyboard of macros to feel competitive. Also, I need something with a bit more emphasis on world PvP. Looking forward to server versus server PvP. And that's from Greg. Yeah, we've talked about the role thing to death on this episode, so that's definitely something we look forward to. But as far as the two-handed Conan the Barbarian type, Guardian, I don't know. You think that's more of a warrior thing?
That's all, Dan.
I think a lot of people are imagining getting into a specific profession with the idea of creating this one iconic, you know, I'm going to wield this.
Yeah.
But once you get into the game, you're going to realize that it's not as much fun if you just wield this. I mean, it'll still be fun, but when you start to learn how to manage your different weapon sets and switching back and forth between whatever's works for that, you know, for that experience that you're currently doing, it's going to just bump up the fun factor by that much more. I mean, I thought to myself that I was just going to be a warrior that wielded a rifle. You know, when I first got there, that's the first thing that I did was I pulled out my rifle, man, and I just ran around with my rifle, and that's all I did. And it got to the point where it wasn't enough for me. I wanted, you know, it felt, you know, it was just like this one weapon. I didn't really know what I was doing. I was kind of new to the character. And it had a cool dynamic, but I think this is part of the altaholic in me that likes to try different things, you know. But I began to be like, I wonder what happens when I do this, you know. And so I'd switch to, like, my dual-wielding axes, or I'd switch to the greatsword or whatever. And the whole experience changes for so much more fun. You feel so much more active in the combat when you're like you're fighting the centaur with you all up and close with your dual wielding axes, and I do my whirling axes and my adrenaline just builds up like crazy, and then I hit F1, which is my special adrenaline skill that just, you know, it came out of the whirling axes so perfectly visually, and I came down with both axes, just kind of went, you know, and I'm not going to make any more sound effects than that. But anyways, and then if that didn't kill it, then I loved double tapping backwards and having my guy dodge out, and I was hitting my tilde button as my guy was dodging backwards, which switches the weapon sets to the rifle, and then I would just light him up with my rifle that way, and having both of those weapon sets and balancing them in the combat is so awesome. But if you're hell-bent on using just a greatsword, I don't think it's going to be as much for AoE as you would expect. You can still effectively have a blast with the two-handed sword if you're fighting one mob. I promise you will. There's one ability that sends you like spinning and moving at the same time that I actually didn't use that one that much because I didn't like not having control of my character's move. Like I just would go so far and I'd just be like, no, I don't want to go that far. So. But there are all of the other abilities. There's just other things that you can do where the person like swings it over their head over and over again, and it just decimates whatever's in front of you, whether that's three mobs or one, you know. And so if you're really bent on doing the barbarian thing with the two-handed sword, you'll still enjoy it. I can promise you that. So.
Cool. And how many different, do you know offhand, like, what professions can wield something like that? I mean, there's guardian, warrior.
I don't know all of the professions that well. I tried my hand at the thief and the elementalist when I was there, but ultimately, because of the fact that I started playing the warrior and played the story mode with Ravius and the others as a warrior, I just became attached to the warrior really, really fast. Mm-hmm. And that's really all I wanted to play because I knew it so well. I felt like I knew it so well.
Yeah.
But as far as what everyone else can wield, I'm not quite sure. I wanted to try out the two-handed mace, but I guess they haven't worked the dynamics of that particular weapon set into the game demo build yet.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't get a chance to do it. But the devs all behind me were like, dude, go to the two-handed mace. And I was like, okay. And so I clicked on it, and like nothing would happen. I'd be like, what? Why can't I equip it? And they're just like, oh, maybe it's not in this build of the demo. And they're like, crap. Oh, man, because it's so awesome, you know?
And you're like, thanks.
I know. I was just like, oh, well, can you give me a little, you know? They're like, no.
Yeah, so I guess we'll just, I think you explained it best. You know, it's kind of checking it out and seeing what you want to play and not just kind of trying to lock yourself into one role like that. I think that's a good advice, I think.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think, you know, we have a couple more emails here, but I think that'll be the last one we read because we're like at an hour and a half here.
It's like a super long episode.
Yeah. But if you want to send us email, send it to Sean, Shawn, at guildcast.com, or Ruby, Rubi, at guildcast.com. Also, you can check out our Twitter and Facebook, and then our main page at guildcast.com, and it'll have the show notes with links to everything that we talked about right in there. Also, be sure to check out that contest that I talked about. Get your guild together and show off and kind of tell us all about it, and we'll see which one we like the best. And I think that's about it. You have anything to pimp there, Dan?
Negative. Oh, Massively Overpowered is the best.
There you
Yay!
Go.
We're so good, we're on a waiting list again for people to join.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think that's it from us. Thanks, Dan, for coming on the show. It's been a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again soon. And I think that's it from us for this week. So until next time, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And I'm Dan.
And we'll talk to you then.